Now, listen to the first thing I said I was going to talk about. What sort of thing justice is and how it arises. Doing wrong, men say, is by its nature a good, and being wronged an evil. But the evil of being wronged outweighs the good of doing wrong. As a result, when people wrong one another and are wronged by one another and get a taste of both, those who are unable to avoid the one and achieve the other think it'll pay them to come to an agreement with one another not to do wrong and not to be wronged. That's how they come to start making laws and agreements with one another and calling lawful and just that which is laid down by the law. They say that justice is a compromise between the best case, which is doing wrong and getting away with it, and the worst case, which is being wronged and being unable to retaliate. The easiest way to see that it is true is to imagine something like this. Suppose we gave each of them, the just and the unjust, the freedom to do whatever he liked. Suppose they had the kind of power they say the ancestor of Gyges the Lydian once had. They say he was a shepherd, and that he was a serf of the man who was at that time the ruler of Lydia. One day there was a great rainstorm and an earthquake in the place where he grazed his sheep. Part of the ground opened up, and a great hole appeared in it. He was astonished when he saw it, but went down into it. And the legend has it that among many marvels he saw a hollow horse made of bronze, with windows in it. Peeping through them, he saw inside what appeared to be a corpse, larger than human, wearing nothing but a golden ring on its hand. They say he removed the ring and came out. The shepherds were having one of their regular meetings so that they could give the king their monthly report on the flocks, and the man turned up as well, wearing the ring. As he sat with the rest of them, he happened to twist the setting of the ring towards him into the palm of his hand. When he did this, he became invisible to those who were sitting with him, and they started talking about him as if he'd gone. He was amazed and twisted the ring again, turning the setting to the outside. As soon as he did so, he became visible. When he realized this, he started experimenting with the ring to see if it did have this power, and he found that that was how it was. When he turned the setting to the inside, he became invisible. When he turned it to the outside, he became visible. Once he had established this, he lost no time arranging to be one of those making the report to the king. When he got there, he seduced the king's wife, plotted with her against the king, killed him, and seized power. Imagine there were two rings like that, and the just man wore one, while the unjust man wore the other. People think that no one would be sufficiently iron-willed to remain within the bounds of justice. No one could bring himself to keep his hands off other people's possessions and steer clear of them if he was free to take whatever he liked without a second thought, in the marketplace or go into people's houses and sleep with anyone he liked, or if he could kill or release from prison anyone he chose, and in general go round acting like a god among men. This is a strong argument, you might say, for the claim that no one is just voluntarily, but only under compulsion. Justice is not thought to be a good thing for individuals, since wherever anyone thinks he can do wrong, he does do wrong. Every man believes injustice to be much more profitable for the individual than justice, and he will be right to think this, according to the person putting forward this view. Anyone who came into possession of the kind of freedom I have described, and then refused ever to do anything wrong, and did not lay a finger on other people's possessions, would be regarded by observers as the most pathetic and brainless of creatures. Though, of course, in public they would praise him, lying to one another because of their fear of being wronged. That's all I have to say about that claim. As for the choice between the lives of the people in question, the only way we can make it properly is by contrasting the completely just man with the completely unjust man. How shall we contrast them? Like this. We will subtract nothing either from the injustice of the unjust man or from the justice of the just man. Let's assume, if the unjust man is going to be really unjust, that he goes about his wrongdoings in the right way and gets away with it. The one who gets caught is to be regarded as incompetent, since perfect injustice consists in appearing to be just when you are not. We must credit the completely unjust man, then, with the most complete injustice. To the person who commits the greatest wrongs, we must not deny, in fact we must grant, the enjoyment of the greatest reputation for justice. That is our model of the unjust man. Beside him, let us put our imaginary just man, a simple and honourable man who wants, in Aeschylus's words, not to appear to be good, but to be good. We must deprive him of the appearance, since if he appears to be just, the appearance of justice will bring him recognition and rewards, and then it will not be clear whether his motive for being just was a desire for justice or a desire for the rewards and the recognition. So we must strip him of everything but justice. We must put him in a situation which is the opposite of our previous example. Despite doing nothing wrong, he must have the worst possible reputation for injustice. Let him live out his life like this, without any change until the day of his death, appearing to be unjust, though actually being just. And if both their situations are as I have described, it shouldn't be beyond us, I imagine, to give a full account of the kind of life which awaits each of them. So that is what I must do now. What Aeschylus said turns out to be a much more accurate description of the unjust man, who wants not to appear to be unjust, but to be unjust. In the first place, they will say, he can be a ruler in his city because of his reputation for justice. Secondly, he can marry where he likes, give his daughters in marriage to whom he chooses, and make contracts and partnerships with anyone he wishes. Besides all this, he finds it easy to make himself a rich man, since he has no compunction about acting unjustly. That is why, they say, he is successful in political and legal disputes, both public and private, and why he gets the better of his enemies. By getting the better of them, he grows rich and can help his friends and harm his enemies. He can make full and generous sacrifices and offerings to the gods, and is much better able than the just man to serve the gods and that part of mankind whom he chooses to serve. As a result, they claim, he is in all probability more likely than the just man to be the gods' favourite.